Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Monday, November 10th. Snowy South Bend, Indiana, where school delays and practice cancellations have kind of screwed things up for me. Can't even get my sprinklers blown out, guys. But regardless, I'm here today. Tim O'Malley, joined by Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated. Drew Medtalk of Irish Illustrated will be joining us later. Tim and Drew, you guys just finished instant analysis, and we finished 30 minutes with Marcus Freeman. We have conversation on Navy injuries, how this is absolutely not a trap game, and we will preview some Pittsburgh. But Tim Priester, let's start quickly with your takeaway from Marcus Freeman's press conference, and then we'll move on to injuries.
Well, I mean, he didn't talk about Navy a whole lot, other than he was really happy with three phases of Notre Dame football, and he should be. It was a very fine performance. But what struck me, Tim, and Drew and I talked about this on Instant Analysis, was as he was talking about Pittsburgh, you know, they're on a winning streak. They got a young quarterback that's playing really well. They've got a defense that's playing really well. Specialty, I think what made me think, wow, see, it sounds like he's talking about his own team, was when he, and there are differences, but when he mentioned special teams, it's been an uptick for Pittsburgh. I need to take a closer look at that. That's what made me think there's a lot of similarities between these two teams. One similarity that is not applicable is the fact that Pittsburgh just had their first 100-yard rusher, Jakarian Turner, in Game 9 this past week against Stanford. Obviously, Notre Dame has a much more quality running game with two backs and Jadarian Price teaming up with Jeremiah Love. But it sounded a lot like Pittsburgh, and Mason Heinschel, he's a player, man.
Yeah, and he's got about 1,475 yards out of his top three wide receivers. So that sounds a little bit unlike Pittsburgh, too. I certainly would. You normally think of a good Pittsburgh offense, you think of LeSean McCoy. And you think of guys in that range. Who was the guy that scored a touchdown? I can't believe it escapes me. My favorite from 2012, the touchdown that ran through Farley when Zeke Modest had to tell Matthias Farley, your arm's already broken, go ahead and use it, Matthias. My favorite story of all time. But yeah, Pittsburgh passing the ball and their offense with an uptick. 21st-ranked defense via FEI. I know a lot of people like to say, who have they played? Well, FEI takes into account who you have played, and Pittsburgh's is 21st. Injury list for the game, left Achilles still for Cooper Flanagan. Not surprising, he would be questionable. Micah Gilbert questionable with that hand injury. This is the first time we could maybe think he might play because he was questionable on game day, but then he had to sit out as well. Jaden Greathouse still listed as questionable with left thigh. Marcus Freeman mentioned it's actually a hamstring today. And then Donovan Heinisch, who really wants to play in this football game. Again, we thought he'd be important in Navy. He'd really love Pittsburgh. He's in concussion protocol, but that was automatic, Tim. He was going to still be in concussion protocol on Monday. The key is he is off that on Thursday when we talked to Marcus Freeman.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about Jaden Greathouse a little bit because Marcus Freeman talked about them drawing blood out of the hamstring. And Drew and I talked about this on Instant. You know, I mean, I think that there's a perception. Look, he wanted to play more early in the year. Then he got hurt as that conversation was going on, and it happened at four games. And so yeah. I think at this point, Notre Dame would like him to redshirt, and he would be available if Notre Dame makes the playoffs. And when you consider that Notre Dame is losing Malachi Fields and Will Pauling and Eli Raritan after this year, you'd love to have save that year of eligibility and put Greathouse at the front of that wide receiving core going into next year. So he is injured. He wanted to play more. Everybody wants to play more. But when those other guys are playing as well as they are and CJ Carr is really distributing the football, it's a unique situation. And when we get into that 5-for-5, when that comes into play, if it does come into play in 2027, as JB has been saying, it'll be a little bit of a different story. We won't be counting games. You know, how many games can he play over the last four, anything like that. But right now that's where we are. And I think Jaden Greathouse will not play the rest of the regular season and see if they can preserve that year of eligibility.
I mean, he shouldn't now, because if he's not totally capable of playing this game, which he's not, if he's questionable, then you better not need him for the last two games. And you have to preserve his year, whether just for him and his agreement with you, or for selfishness for him, or for team first glory for you, or for common sense logic for both of you, because he would much rather not waste this season, whether he's transferring on December 1st, January 21st, or not at all. He's still much better off not playing these last three games.
No, that's exactly right. And speaking of team glory, you know, I kept waiting for Marcus Freeman to use that phrase, team glory, when he was talking about Jeremiah Love and the Heisman. And you know, he was the point was, if Notre Dame does great, Jeremiah Love's going to do great, and it puts Jeremiah Love in a position to win that award. I don't know. I kept expecting him to say Team Glory, because that's true, and that's the way Notre Dame does business around here. But running backs don't win the Heisman. Fernando Mendoza's in a really good spot after what he did at his receiver at the back of the end zone, you know, against Penn State. But, you know, I think, and Todd Blackledge said it during the broadcast, and I agree with him. He said, you know, Jeremiah Love and Jeremiah Smith are two of the best football players in the country, and they do deserve to be at the Heisman Awards. Whether they actually win the award or go somewhere else, that's to be determined.
Right now, and I'm going to throw it to Drew real fast here. I mean, Fernando Mendoza had a true Heisman moment, too. He was already kind of the leader in the clubhouse going in. He obviously had a remarkable comeback win to keep his undefeated season alive. I mentioned to somebody a week ago, if Jeremiah Love was on a 10-0 team, he'd be number two in the Heisman odds right now. He's on an 8-2 team. His Heisman moment is a cool highlight. His other Heisman moment is a cool highlight. It's just not the way it works. I think a 10-0 team and Jeremiah Love goes out to Stanford and they secure 12-0 and the second ranking in the country and he runs for 290 yards. Bang, Jeremiah Love Heisman. I don't know if that's going to work now as they try and maintain some position for the playoffs. I just feel it's a different situation.
Yeah, I agree. And it is just really tough with being a running back. Only three have won this century, and two of them had a much higher workload. And for as great as Jeremiah Love has been, he hasn't been quite as efficient as a Reggie Bush was. And I think it was 2005 where he averaged, I think, like 8.9 or 8.7 yards per carry. Jeremiah Love hasn't quite done that type of level of efficiency to be there for a guy who's not getting that level of workload you would need from a running back. Like Ashton Jeanty almost did last year too. So
imagine, and he did complain about it. You know, he thought he deserved it. Imagine being Ashton Jeanty and saying, what the hell do I have to do to win the Heisman?
2,600 yards. He would have won it on Notre Dame.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. Yeah.
And you bring up, Drew, when you bring up Reggie Bush, I mean, I know Liner won the Heisman the year before, but Reggie Bush was the most famous player by far that year. And he was on the team that when his season ended, regular season ended, they were going to win the national title. Now they lost the national title game, but that's not what the Heisman is voted upon. Mark Ingram, 2009, Alabama. That's a big difference too, isn't it? I mean, you're on Derrick Henry, 2015, Alabama. 10-0 Jeremiah Love would be at second place at least. We're never going to know that, so I'm not going to keep harping on it. But I think the 0-2 start, and also 0-2 start and not doing a single thing in the first game. Not his fault, but didn't do a single thing in that game. So that hurts a little bit. You see things come across Twitter and it says he's unstoppable and all that, which I believe is true. And then every Miami fan in the world puts up a box score and says, I know one team that can stop him. And it's like, well, they're going to always have that on you. That does exist. But maybe if Miami loses a third game, they won't be talking quite as much. Drew, we talked about some injuries, questionable. The relevant one, I think, is Noah Burnett out, not listed on the depth chart. I assume, Tim and Drew, that means maybe shut it down and for a couple weeks and make sure he could be available to you.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Just, I mean, this is the week you'd want him for the end of the year. So if he's not here for Pitt, then I think that's a reasonable thing. And we're going to really see how much that new routine for Eric Schmidt is working for him, because it's one thing to go 7-for-7 on extra points and be successful on your kickoffs. It's another thing to go into what should be a hostile environment with game day there, one of the biggest games for Pitt in a while, and see how he handles that kind of pressure, especially when the last time he attempted a field goal, he missed it pretty far wide right.
Tim, we talked last year on the podcast that they got to get Jeter back to get a couple kicks in so his first kick isn't the most important kick. I mean, that's doubly true for Noah Burnett. It would be great if they could get him out there kicking a field goal against Stanford, even if it's not a high leverage thing. But what is your thoughts to what I brought up last week or on incident analysis? What if Eric Schmidt goes 4-for-4 to finish the season?
No, that's what I was just going to say. I mean, he look, I know they're just extra points, but that was step number one for him. Right. And he had made extra points. I get that. But he had to get out there and get some confidence. And he looked, you know, when he missed the field goals, he pulled off the ball. He didn't do that on these extra points. He seemed pretty dialed in and he was repeating his routine. But yeah, I guess Notre Dame would have to have a decision to make. But boy, you know, putting Noah Burnett out there, I don't know, maybe they're in the playoffs on the road. Even if they're at home, it's not an ideal situation, but
he's not as good as Jeter. Let's just be, I mean, Mitch Jeter was clearly the best kicker on the team. It wasn't.
No doubt about it. No doubt. Even though the numbers this year say the Burnett, you know, he's been 5 out of 6, but look, they've got their hands full with Pittsburgh. There's no doubt about that. You talked about the receivers, Tim Kenny Johnson with 573 yards and 4 touchdowns, Raphael Williams, they're 37 and 36 receptions, so those are definitely the top two. And then there's Kataris Hicks, who's down there with 19, and then you start to get into the running backs and the tight ends. But those top two, Johnson, Williams, will be a handful for Notre Dame. But I think a healthy secondary, Notre Dame needs Christian Gray back out there. You know, Mason Heintzel's been very good. His pocket presence and his vision downfield and his feel for the game are very, very good. But as Drew and I talked about, he's got 5 interceptions, about 1 every 30-some passes. He's made some bad decisions. A couple weeks ago, he had 2 turnovers in the fourth quarter, which Pat Narduzzi was not really happy about that. So I think he had 2 fumbles, actually, against Florida State. Yeah, I'm not sure if there was another one there. So when I watch him, man, he is really, really poised. Then you look at the stat sheet, and he has made some mistakes, just like a freshman will.
And I think Hicks is 19 yards a catch.
Yeah.
That's when you have to worry, and I'm writing about this in Monday Musings. You know, Miami had 3 receivers. Texas A&M famously had 3 receivers. USC had 3 receivers that could bother you. Pittsburgh has 3 receivers that could bother you, and that is exactly what has bothered Notre Dame's pass defense this year. Those 3 teams, I bring up USC, obviously very good receivers. You had to change your whole scheme for them, but that was not the beginning of the year. That was recently.
Right. You got to get Dallas Golden back involved at nickel. You had a different situation with Navy. I thought Devontae Smith did some really good things, but in a hybrid position, he's defending Navy wideouts.
he was defending the Navy option, wasn't he?
Right. Like, it's like, wait a minute, he's playing corner, but you understand, because contrary to Navy in the past, you know, they'd have a wideout that led them in receiving. It's Heidenreich, a slot back with 33.
Right. They usually had one guy. You're right. You're right.
And then Chapman's number 2 with like 16 or 17 catches. So it's a little bit different animal with Navy.
Yeah, I think the USC game could be really, I mean, that was a game where they just gave up a lot of yards to the air and really shut down the run and forced some turnovers. So that was really the pass defense. Was, I think we're going to pick off 3 passes. That could be the case here, but I'm not going to be surprised if Pitt still gets a lot of yards to the air. Maybe it doesn't lead to them scoring, you know, more than 24, 27 points. But
we'll get back to Pitt in segment 2 on Thursday, but we should wrap up what we saw against Navy. Quickly, though, Notre Dame moves up to 9 as expected. Obviously, when one team loses in front of you, BYU, you move up to 9 and the coach is an AP poll. That's the way it was for 100 years. But not for 100 years is the college football playoff on Tuesday. Do you guys expect a number 9 ranking there as well?
I do. I mean, I think BYU will fall behind. BYU barely competed. They didn't compete. They were down. They didn't score in the middle of the fourth quarter.
Yeah. They belong out of it unless they win the conference.
Yeah, they really do. They really do. And I know that Joey McGuire thinks that the Big 12 is the SEC, but it's not. Yeah. And, you know, playing in that conference, I think the committee, my point was that, you know, the committee now, clearly, they're not always just going to go by record. And I think the one loss for BYU was decisive enough that they will fall behind Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I think we saw last week that, you know, non-Big Ten SEC teams that have one loss, they're willing to put them much farther back. You know, what we saw with Virginia and Georgia Tech and those teams were already ranked behind Louisville. So I expect BYU with it. I know they have a win over Utah, but that was pretty close. I think they're going to drop pretty good. And none of the teams who could leap Notre Dame, well, the two main ones, which I'm sure we'll discuss later, both of them were off this last weekend. So it's hard to see them surpassing Notre Dame. So I think 9 is kind of right where they'll be. I don't see them being able to go higher than that just because Oregon did pull out that win over Iowa. That was the one kind of shaky loss or win.
Yeah, Tim, if I could interrupt, I want Drew to talk about what we were talking about as far as Texas, Oklahoma.
We have a question on that in segment two.
We do. Okay. Very good.
So
very good.
I wanted to point out Oregon, if you're a Notre Dame fan, and you probably are if you're listening to this podcast. That Oregon comeback really hurt in terms, not really hurt, really hurt in terms of an automatic get in at the end of the year by Notre Dame. Oregon loses that for game number two. That's a world of hurt. Now it's just a heroic comeback against a team that's ranked with a good defense. It's not even a bad win. It's a good win on the road. I know it was ugly, but if you're a Notre Dame fan and Notre Dame does that on the road against a 23rd ranked team in the country, you're very happy about that as well. That was a pretty big moment by Dante Moore, who had his impact against Notre Dame fans right there.
Yeah, and you had Kirk Herbstreit going on television saying or Iowa's going to win that game, like how tough of an environment that was. Like, I think the stage was set for that to now look more heroic than maybe it could have been. So,
I mean, that's kind of how I felt about Indiana, too. I know Penn State stinks, but Penn State didn't stink that day. I've watched a lot of college football in our lives, and we know Penn State was a pretty good football team when they played Oregon. They were dispirited and ruined since, and they rallied and were a pretty good team on that day against Indiana. I know it's not a great win, but I don't devalue that like they came back to beat Florida Atlantic. They came back to beat a team that does have the ability, that has had a bad football season. So two bad things for Notre Dame, but all the teams that when you lose once, as Drew pointed out, like Virginia, when Virginia loses, they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt over Notre Dame or Texas or Alabama, not Alabama this year, but you know what I'm saying? Notre Dame, Texas, Oklahoma, BYU's not either. That's just, there's Tim Priester, as we've said, there are human beings in that room and they see what we see. You're not going to go that way. Navy, no real bad news coming out, except the emergence of Sean Sevilano is short-lived. He has an ankle injury and is listed as out. He came in on the second series. Sean Sevilano was a major part of the plan. We looked down there and I think it was Pete Sampson's like, that's not Hughes, that's Sevilano. I was like, that can't be true. It's the first quarter. But he obviously was coming in to block up the middle. It worked great. Notre Dame, a nearly perfect game. And when they play a nearly perfect game, we should talk about it a little bit more. Pitt's not Alabama, for crying out loud. Let's talk about Navy. That was a fantastic game, because although Blake Horvath was out, and we talked about that post-incident analysis, huge difference. To play as sloppily as you did against Boston College and to play as well as you did against Navy, that's a heck of a coaching effort and good focus by the team.
Yeah, they came out ready to play. They scored right away. They did what they had to do. And a really impressive thing, 21-10 at halftime, you're thinking, okay, well, you get the opening kickoff, it's important for you to score. Well, they score all three times, all three possessions. And we always talk about possessions. And I know there are people saying, well, it's being overstated. Well, when Navy wins, they limit possessions. And Notre Dame didn't allow them to do that. So the three touchdown drives were huge in the third quarter, put the game away pretty quickly. I thought it was interesting that Brian Newberry, who really has not competed well at all against Notre Dame in three games, he went for it on fourth down early in the third quarter, because he's just like, we got to take advantage of this opportunity. If we don't, it's going to get away from us. And it got away from him.
Yeah. And I think going back to even BC, where, I mean, every good team's going to have a bad game. I think the Solid Verbal podcast always says win your clunkers. And I think if you're a Notre Dame fan, you want to see, okay, here's all the mistakes we did. We were really not great in special teams. We're heavily penalized, had some pretty inefficient drives. And they kind of cleaned up all of that in 1 week in some kind of shaky conditions where it was raining, sleeting, or snowing pretty much the entire game, and came out and put together a pretty good performance. So I think you want to see a team that can go from week to week, make improvements, adjust, and kind of get better as Notre Dame closes out the season. And I think that's significant.
And CJ Carr, you talk about Heisman talk, he's going to be the leading candidate coming into next year, because that's as good of a 16 pass day as you can have. There was one drop. He made one mistake. Marcus Freeman talked about it today, and it resulted in a three and out. That's what you want from your quarterback against Navy. We mentioned there's only a couple ways to lose this game. He didn't do any of those things that allow you to lose these games.
Yeah, I think Julian Sayin will have a say in the preseason Heisman next year as well. But no, CJ Carr has responded exactly the way you wanted him to after the USC game, and you're glad that it ended in a win. Played better against Boston College, and then, had a typical big-time Notre Dame quarterback game against Navy. Just, pretty much shredded him, did what he had to do. Only completed three passes in the second half, but two went for touchdowns, because obviously they didn't have to to throw anymore. But now this will be a good challenge for him, an even greater challenge for Notre Dame's offensive line. It's a matchup that concerns me, but I think we have a question on that too, Tim, right? About Absher and Otting. I will save my thoughts for the second segment, but I thought that they, you know, Otting is doing a really good job of getting guys set up, making calls. Marcus Freeman mentioned that today. And I thought Absher settled in nicely. We'll talk about that a little bit more in segment two, but that's the Pitt defensive line. I know that, you know, you look at some of the games, people have said, well, you know, they gave up 31 to West Virginia. That was an OT. They gave up 34 to Louisville. They gave up 31 to Florida State. What's so great about this defense? But I think that you'll see when you dig deeper into it that they've got some players, and as usual, a lot of those guys are up front. So it's going to be a great challenge for Notre Dame's up front offensive line.
Segment one was brought to you by the RV Manufactured Housing Hall of Fame in Elkhart, Indiana. In addition to the museum and its various exhibition halls, the campus is open to the public for free camping and is less than an hour from Notre Dame's campus. No reservation required. Whether you're looking to learn more about the history of recreational vehicles in the Kinland Library, or simply for a cost-effective, interesting place to stay on their family road trip, the RV Manufactured Housing Hall of Fame can provide exactly what you're looking for. We'll be back with segment two, burning up the boards. Welcome back to segment two. Our first question is from Irish Gambler. It's got a Navy theme, but I think it could have something going for it as well. Did Madden Faremo take Jalen Snead's snaps? I did not expect to see a first-year linebacker have the impact that Faremo had against Navy. And for reference, it was about 29-18 in snaps in favor of Faremo.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, Faremo's been coming on. I thought there were a couple missteps by Snead along the way, including that 41-yard run by Braxton Woodson. There was another play where I just don't think that he, I don't know if it was it that one, or he was clinging to Alex Tetzka when.
He did it on the 41-yard run. I mean, up by Woods. And yeah, maybe, he was a man, maybe, but you still saw it happening. You got to come off.
Like yeah, I thought he had a clear view of it. Yeah. He didn't really respond to it very well.
Yeah, he like watched him run by and kept running with the receiver and then looked back. It's like, oh, wait, I need to go get him almost. So that was definitely an odd situation. It's interesting because he played so well against Navy last year. You almost have to wonder if in Chris Ash's scheme, if they're asking to maybe do some different things than what they had in the past. I mean, it's also a game where apparently they didn't play Boubacar Traore for non-health reasons. So maybe they just had things that on the line of scrimmage, those type of players weren't as valuable. And a guy like Faremo, who is definitely better in coverage and can do some different things, maybe his skill set just matched up. But did Faremo play against Boston College? I don't know if he.
I don't think he got in against Boston College, actually. No.
So I'd be curious. Maybe not trending, but it's definitely an interesting sign that you have such a young player who can kind of handle Navy's defense, whereas in the past, you usually hear a lot of the younger linebackers saying about how over their head they are in that game. So
I comment.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I comment on this and tail of the tape that, you know, about Snead. And then, you know, I want to be fair to Botello because. He was coming off a concussion a while back and then his summer injury and what have you. But, you know, that end around by number 86, or wide receiver, and Blackledge talked about his eyes being in the wrong place. And it was absolutely true. It's just running for the sake of running as opposed to putting your eyes where they need to be. Because I thought that was a fairly easy read. That he just, you know, kept chasing the quarterback who was never going to catch in that situation. And that's, you know, that's just kind of been the reality is it's just kind of been Snead and Botello that they're not always dialed in to what they need to do. And so their careers have been up and down. And I think it's reflective of that.
And, you know, I don't think it'd be overly punitive because as Drew pointed out, Snead was so good against Navy last year, but he did have the dumbest penalty in the world against Boston College. That maybe didn't hurt his work week going in. Yeah. that was not an aggressive penalty. That was just dumb. And that's something that if you're trying to clean it up a little bit, that would be one to clean up. Our next question from the Rick ND, the rotation seems to really be the key to success on this Irish defensive line, especially against the run. While guys like Hughes and Dawson are ascending, we still don't have that Mills Cross type of guy up front. Can we expect to see the level of success we've seen in the past few weeks in the playoffs? Or does a rotation get exposed?
Well, I think it's a fair question, and I think that it's, you know, it can be a little bit concerning. No, there isn't a whole lot of star power there, although they've certainly been playing very well collectively. You called a right TO on Dawson, and Dawson played a good game against Navy. Body type you were talking about, and I thought that he played well. But, wow, if you're getting deep into the playoffs and you're going against better offensive lines, it is a concern. You like that star power so a guy can make a, you know, when you're not expecting it, a four-yard loss, just beats a man one-on-one just because of sheer ability and skill set. So hopefully it continues, and, it, you know, it's carried them into – What was it like? There's the going into the weekend. I don't know. Did Navy and their yards per carry, did that push Notre Dame back over 3 per carry? I'm not sure, but Notre Dame was like one of 19 or 20 or 21 teams in the country holding opponents to less than 3 yards per carry.
Maybe Pitt.
Yeah, I think.
Go ahead, Drew.
My first, Notre Dame is over 3 yards a carry. They're 3.1 now allowed. So just a little bit. But my first reaction was, yes, there could be concern. And then I remember Mills went out in the first half against IU last year in the playoffs. And then Howard Cross had his high ankle sprain, only had 5 tackles. And I don't think any were for a loss or sacks last year through the playoffs, too. So even those 2 main defensive tackles that you're referencing for the postseason, they didn't really have throughout a lot of their success in the postseason. So I think it's encouraging that the defensive line is kind of ascending. I mean, they definitely, we thought they'd play better earlier in the year, especially at the middle, they didn't. And then we've kind of seen that and getting more guys in, like even Armel Mukum was out there making plays. Guys who are on scout team offense throughout some of the weeks recently were making plays against Navy. So I think that's encouraging. And we've seen them kind of piece it together before. And that's also something you're going to need for next year when guys are also like Jared Dawson are off the team. So
Mukum made a play. Mukum made a play down the line.
Mukum made 2 plays. Yeah. He had a pass pressure too. It looked like Bukayo Traore was getting ready to come in when Mukum went in the first time. I'm not saying together. They were going to come in together. It was Bryce Young and Traore, and Traore was jumping around. Drive lasted maybe a touch longer, and then he didn't come in at all. So obviously he wasn't going to be huge in the equation, but maybe if you don't show that well against the show team on Tuesday and Wednesday in your defensive end at Notre Dame playing Navy, and you have Bryce Young and Josh Burnham and Botello, you don't need to play against Navy either. Also, Bryce Young barely played against Navy last year as a freshman. They just held him out.
I wanted you guys to weigh in on my question of Marcus Freeman about Bryce Young and getting, you know, adapted. And he admitted that at here's the thing with Bryce Young, he doesn't stop growing up and like height wise. And so I think he's just had difficulty learning how to play in his body. And I've said that on our message board and it's kind of received poorly. Look, man, I mean, you try growing an inch and a half every year or an inch every year for how many years? I think, and then you add the weight to it. But anyway, your guy's opinion about what Marcus Freeman said about when I asked him about Bryce Young.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. There's response to kind of what you said is that maybe there needs to be different techniques and styles of play that he has now that he's added even about 20 pounds from last season too. So maybe there are some things that he's kind of starting all over. I was a little surprised when Marcus Freeman said he's grading out and doing all the things we want. I wonder if that was maybe just a little bit of cover for a younger player who they're really high on and they're not really trying to criticize publicly. But yeah, I mean, his body has changed, as you mentioned, over the last 4 or 5 years of his life. He's gone from a guy as, I think, a sophomore, he was still like playing wide receiver, to putting him at defensive end, and he's just growing and growing and growing.
That's like a 4-year span, a 4 or 5 year span. I remember when I first started talking to his dad about Bryce, he was saying, yeah, he's going to shoot past me. He wasn't even as tall as BY. You know, BY's like 6'3". Maybe
I think 6'3" is right.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead, Tim.
No, I was curious as what you thought, Tim.
I think he's gonna be much better next year, and I agree with you guys that growing into his body is important. I could see their grades being better than we would give him credit for, because first of all, you have to think our entire staff probably ranked him in the top 12 for this year in the summer for Notre Dame's team, right? So last year, a lot of his best plays were special teams and also some plays defensively. I mean, he was a punt blocker last year, field goal blocks. He has more pressures right now than he had all of last year in 16 games.
Really?
He has more run stuff.
It's only halfway.
Yeah. No, I mean, he has more pressures now than he had in 16 games last year. He has more pressures today than he had in 16 games last year. He has more run stuffs today than he had in 16 games last year. Plays a little bit more now. I mean, but his snaps aren't there yet. Obviously, his snaps aren't there yet. I just think he has fallen short of expectations. I don't think he's playing all that poorly.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
See things go wrong, you wonder about him.
I comment and tell the tape. I thought there were times where he didn't know where the ball was.
I bet he did. That's not his game, right? I mean, I know this is not the game where he has not played well, but he played two snaps against Navy and three snaps against Army last year. He's probably like, dude, I don't know what's going on. It's just like, to be fair, it's a Navy game. It's
there's a couple plays. It's like, PY, you got to find the ball, man.
It's probably like, yeah, I'm confident, coach. Let's go. Get out there. And you're like, oh, this is terrible. I get it. I mean, like, not everybody can be Devonta Smith, right? Devonta Smith had never heard. We were joking about Devonta Smith coming to Notre Dame. He's like, what do you mean we play a triple option team when they're getting ready to prepare for it? And he did a heck of a job. So.
Wait a minute. Did I sign that contract already?
you're playing me this game? But yeah, he did a great job. I don't know. I think Bryce Young has fallen short of our lofty expectations. We heard in the summer, oh my God, he's the breakout player of the year and all this stuff. And he's not that, but I think he's fine. And next year you would be really upset if he'd fall short of expectations.
Well, he's got to be a playmaker for him next year.
Yes.
I mean, you just got to be a playmaker.
Yeah. Next question from Wash ND. With the collapse of the ACC as expected, he says, and Texas Tech destroying BYU as expected, Wash was correct on a lot of things. It looks like, is ND now a complete lock for the playoffs if they just went out? If so, it would almost seem like they now have a 50-50 shot at hosting a playoff game as well. And this is where we're going to go to Mentok for the previous segment.
Yeah, so I don't think they're quite a lock yet, even though they're definitely well-positioned, especially after appearing at number 10 last week. But ESPN's FPI, which definitely isn't perfect, gives Notre Dame a 70.7% chance to win out, and they're only a 48% chance to make the playoffs. So I think even I'll kind of take Bryce's role this week. But if you look at like this upcoming weekend, you got Texas at Georgia and Oklahoma at Alabama. And I think, for instance, those are Texas and Oklahoma are both teams that definitely have a chance to jump Notre Dame if they win, because they're ranked right behind them right now. And then if it's a close game, Alabama and Georgia still also could be ranked ahead of Notre Dame too. So that's like kind of a worst case scenario that could push Notre Dame back. And that's the type of thing you got to watch out for. Plus, like, if you look, Texas Tech might win out the rest of the season and then they lose in the Big 12 championship game to a BYU, then now both of them are in. So you really need to be in that top nine spot to make sure you're getting the playoffs. So you got to watch out for teams that could jump them. Now, Texas could win this weekend and then lose to Texas A&M to close out the year and still get knocked out. So there are other things that could happen, but Notre Dame's position isn't quite set as much as you'd like it to be. So this weekend will be really huge for them.
I'm pretty confident that Oklahoma will lose this weekend.
If they don't, Tim, Alabama will stay ahead of Notre Dame.
Yes.
Alabama will.
Yeah.
I don't think Georgia, if Georgia loses, I don't think they will.
But. Yeah. And Texas was on life support at one point. I guess you could kind of say that about Notre Dame. But, you know, immediately you're talking about Notre Dame's going to run the table after going 0-2. I'm not sure that it was that optimistic with Texas, probably because they're, you know, the conference that they're in, there's a little bit more, you know, reason to think that they might lose. But it'd be nice. Yeah, this is the opportunity for those two to get knocked out, and Alabama and Georgia have to take advantage.
If you're wondering about point spreads, I agree Alabama will handle Oklahoma just the way they're playing. Alabama is favored by 7 and Georgia is favored by 6. Man, I would just think that Georgia would be favored by 4.5 and Alabama would be favored by 8.5 if I was the amateur that I am trying to make lines, because I don't see those as a 1-point differential in the differential between the teams. Do you guys?
One score differential?
No, I don't see Oklahoma being a point worse than Texas in its matchup versus Alabama.
I see.
Georgia.
No, I do not.
No, definitely.
We have a question from Siggy12. Looking ahead, how does Notre Dame's deep ball threat position them for playoff success? In the past, the team has had great run games and sturdy defensive play, but lacked the chunk play ability.
Yeah, I think it's definitely huge. And just even for how they set up their run game, like I actually asked Marcus Freeman last week about CJ Carr's deep ball and that progression. And he talked a lot about how last year they had the quarterback run with Riley Leonard, and that kind of let them free things up when teams loaded the box because they had to account for that. And this is kind of the different way he does that. But I mean, Carr is not just good at this or better than Notre Dame quarterbacks we've seen in the past either. He's leading the nation with 10.1 yards per pass attempt, and he's third in quarterback rating. So he's been super efficient, and he pushed the ball really well downfield. And I think I also want to go back to the USC game, where that's the one team that really didn't focus on the run with their game plan. And so even though he had maybe one of his worst games, definitely his worst game of the season, the fact that they were accounting so much for that deep ball and trying to take it away has helped them so much in that game. And that could be something if teams really are afraid of Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, like, could come into play in the playoffs as well.
I think the nuance of the deep ball is important, Drew. That's a great point because, well, first of all, last year they didn't have it. They didn't have the threat. Among the playoff teams last year, Notre Dame was 11th in terms of, I use the deep ball as 30-yard passes. You guys think that's fair? I try not to go all the way to 40 and 50-yard passes. So I use deep shots as 30-yard passes. Notre Dame was 76th nationally. Navy was 70th in 30-yard pass completions last year. Penn State, everybody's old pals, were 87th, and it looked like it when they played Notre Dame. They didn't have a deep threat. Didn't work out for them. This year, I mean, Notre Dame is 21st. Among the playoff teams, only, I mean, Ole Miss is a playoff team. Ole Miss is number one. They're the best at taking it deep. But OSU and Pittsburgh, by the way, are 17th and 18th in passes over 30 yards. Texas Tech is way up there as well. But my point is Notre Dame's now in the top quadrant of playoff teams, people that could be in the playoffs in terms of deep balls. And I think it's the threat of the deep ball that is huge for the running game.
Good time to have good safeties when you're playing Pittsburgh.
And your cornerback, pretty important.
Yeah, no doubt. The deep ball, back to the original question, the deep ball accuracy of CJ Carr is pretty phenomenal. I mean, when he's unleashing it, you feel pretty damn confident It's going to be on target. There's a good chance of it being completed. But, you know, we saw this, Tim. We saw the graphic when we were in a press box on Saturday night that in nine games, Notre Dame has more 20-yard throws, 30-yard throws, 40-yard throws than they did in 16 last year, which is, you know, quite a disparity. But yeah, you feel confident when the kid's letting it go, except that one time when he threw it into double coverage, which you cringe as soon as you know that he's going to release it. But yeah, that's huge. That's a difference maker. That's the kind of thing that takes you from losing a, you know, early round game into the championship. Now, they did enough great things that they got there anyway, and you had Mitch Jeter, Money Mitch, coming through in the clutch to win the Penn State game. But big difference. That championship teams have the ability to push the ball down the field.
Well, to your point, Tim Priester, here's the championship teams of the last 6 years. By the way, Priester, you say what a deep ball could do? I know what it could do. You could go undefeated because the deep ball to Chris Mitchell was an easy touchdown, and Notre Dame would have been 12-0 and ranked number five in the country, or ranked number two, but pushed back to number five in those stupid archaic rules. Clemson. 2018, you guys all remember Clemson's passing attack, right, Priester? You guys saw that? Clemson was number six in gains over 30 yards passing. LSU, I'll give you guys all one guess, and nothing else counts with Joe Burrow on this one. You guys can probably figure that one out, what they are ranked, right? Alabama was number three. Georgia was number eight. Georgia, again, was number 20. And this is just funny because I think it's an outlier. You guys try to guess what Michigan was in deep in passes over 30 yards gained. Awesome.
67th.
Higher. Lower, whatever. Worse.
94th.
99th. That's awesome. Oh. And Ohio State was top five. Everyone didn't know what they were. But yeah, that's just great that Michigan was 99. So don't follow the Michigan path to a title. Don't follow the Michigan path anywhere in life, Tim Priester, if you can avoid it. Our next question.
Not in 2025. No. When I was growing up, that was the formula for success. You didn't have to. I mean, when I was growing up. I mean, into adulthood, you didn't have to have a great quarterback to win national championships. It behooves you to have one now.
Yeah, I named a lot of great quarterbacks in that list, I think. Actually, J.J. McCarthy is a pretty good quarterback, too. Yeah. But Canadian Invasion, after viewing three games of Joe Otting and two games of Sullivan Absher, is this offensive line prepared for Pittsburgh? Will it feel like last year in terms of plug and play, in terms of the injuries working out, or will we be talking about a lack of chemistry come Saturday evening? Tim Priester, you go.
Really, really, really happy to see how Sullivan Absher played against Navy. I would have, you know, and again, when we're at the game, we're in the ninth floor of the home press box, only because they don't have a 10th floor. And it's just difficult to watch everything that's going on. And so I was very eager to see Absher's performance on the TV version. he really, really did a very nice job. And it was like a completely different guy than what he was against BC. He was slow. He was tentative. He wasn't sure against BC. He went after Navy's defensive linemen. Those two interior defensive linemen were good. And I thought him and Odding played really, really well, especially Absher. I watched Absher more than I did Odding this time around, but he was decisive and he was quick. He was quick off the snap of the football. And so that's really encouraging. But what you're going to deal with this weekend, Joe Odding and Sullivan Absher, you're going to have to take your game up a couple notches because this will be a great challenge. But as it relates to Absher, I was very, very happy for him and for Notre Dame's offensive line to see just how aggressive he was. When you're playing free and easy and aggressive, he's capable of doing some really good things.
Yeah, I think I still want to see more from Absher this weekend in the run game. And I mean, they still got stuff sometimes. I know Navy was loading the box, but I could see Pitt playing some pretty heavy box as well. But I think the really big thing with them, I mean, they gave up two pressures against Navy over the weekend. So I think that's going to be really significant. Pitt's like tied for 21st in the nation in sacks this year. So if they can keep CJ Carr clean, I think that's going to go a long way. And as we just talked about, opening up the rest of the game for the offense. And yeah, it's encouraging if you're a Notre Dame fan to see those guys pass protecting well too, and doing, keeping them safe against some, you know, Navy likes to throw things at inexperienced offensive linemen.
You know, I mean, he's been kept clean for a while now.
CJ Carr really has.
At USC, I barely remember pressure. There was one, right, through Lambert, maybe? One real one? I know Pro Football Focus probably had two or three or four on there, but they always will. I mean,
it was Lambert and then one on Jeremiah Love, and then there was Skylos Prescott had one, but obviously that wasn't.
I meant USC even, like a team as good as Pitt. Like, I don't remember USC getting in there. I don't remember. Boise was all about the pressure. I don't remember them getting that many pressures on CJ Carr, if I can look it up on Bad Radio real fast here. But like, it's been since A&M that I feel like he's been under duress.
Well, another reason why Anthony Knapp's underrated. I mean, you just don't, he doesn't stand out very often as blowing somebody off the football, neither does Emil Wagner, but there's no way, you know, they have to be doing some really, really good things for Carr to be kept as clean as he has been.
This is incredible. Boise State was four pressures. NC State was three pressures. USC three pressures. I mean, I can't imagine Arkansas had that many. If they did, it doesn't matter that much, does it?
Yeah. And to your point, USC is also tied for 21st with Pittsburgh in sacks this year. Texas A&M, the only team you'd say, the last team to really pressure him, is second right now in sacks. So,
wow,
obviously a different caliber.
That's incredible. They had to remake their defensive line.
Yeah. Next question from Denver Maximus. This is harkens back to last week. You guys started the week by saying you can't take or learn too much from the Navy game. But zero penalties, zero turnovers, almost 100% red zone efficiency other than the kneel down. Cam Williams, KK Smith, and an Aeneas Williams sighting. Can we please take something positive away anyway?
Yeah, this goes back to what I said earlier in the show, that you had them have such a bad performance or a shaky performance against BC. So it's seeing them clean up so many things, I think, is huge, and getting some of those younger guys. And I mean, I think everyone in the press box, when they threw that ball that ended up being a pass interference to Cam Williams, I had to double check who five was for a second because we were so surprised to see him. So I think seeing him starting to get in there, and that wasn't when the game was, I mean, it was definitely out of hand, but it wasn't like all the subs were in at that point either. They were getting him some minutes. So I think Casey Smith, as you mentioned, still keeps doing good things. So getting some of those younger guys in who they might need this year, but they're definitely going to start needing next year too. I think the Navy, there was a lot of, even if it's a weird game, there was a lot of positives to glean. Maybe, you know, they're going to see a lot of different things and they might have to recover a little bit from going from a triple option or wing T to what Pitt does. But I think seeing that improvement is huge.
Did we say that you couldn't take much from playing Navy?
Yeah, that's been Pete's theory for a while, that it's kind of a one-off. Like, you know, when guys like, well, Traore didn't play at all, it is a one-off. There's Christian Gray was probably held out, you know. It's just defensively, I think it's a one-off.
I want to know more about that Traore situation, because I think it seems a little curious to me. I'm not sure that I'm fully buying into everything that's been said, and very little has been said about it. They need him this weekend, no doubt about it. But
good news is he wasn't on the questionable list. If he pops up on questionable Thursday, then it gets a little more of a They usually pop up as questionable on Thursday if they're going to totally miss. Am I
Yeah, I don't like. I don't think it's an injury. I don't know, but they need him. Look, anytime zero turnovers, zero penalties. I don't care.
Yeah, that's
good. Who you're playing. I mean, I'm going to take something from that. I just took a strong performance by Sullivan Absher against Navy as significant. So, you know, it all adds to it. KK Smith finds ways to show up. He
$700,000 cheaper on that touchdown. I told you guys that.
He disappears for a while. Then he comes back. Aeneas Williams, not only the 54-yard just absolute burst through the hole, but his first carry was a 16-yard Bronco-busting physical run. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I remember Aeneas Williams running like that. Out of sight, out of mind, really, up until this game.
You know that 54-yard touchdown was on fourth and short. I'd like to point that out as well. Just pointing out he's a pretty good short yardage runner, just in case anyone needs anyone in there instead of Price.
We have a question from Franken Cow. Jordan Faison must have an insane broken tackle rate, yet maybe not so impressive yards after contact, since he always turns 6 yards into 10 yards and a first down. I'm confused by that statement, but I'll let you guys...
He's saying that he's great at breaking tackles, but he doesn't go 90 yards.
Okay, fair enough. But he's generally starting, you know, with it. Okay, whatever. Anyway, the question is, do you have data? Okay, do you have data that supports this? And if so, how does it compare to previous years when TP noted it was an area to improve, as well as other Notre Dame players? I was harping on that last year. There was a number that came from the broadcast. Was there not? I used it in Tail of the Tape.
I looked it up myself without doing the broadcast.
He
has 19 missed tackles.
Okay, 19 missed tackles, which places him among the top five among Power 4 wideouts. Did I hear that correctly? I'm not surprised, because he gets yards after the catch every week. And when I did I always do that during the bye week, update yards after catch, all the receivers and stuff like that. And he was far and away Notre Dame's leader. Part of it is just the way they get him the football. You know, it's an underneath kind of tunnel screen type of things. So it sets itself up for that. But his ability to break tackles now is, I have a tremendous amount of respect for how he improved his game in that area.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, I mean, usually on third down when they throw the ball short of the sticks, you're like, oh no, what are you thinking? But with him, you're like, oh, that's probably a decent chance of going to be a successful play. And just to kind of add to the stats, he has 263 yards of his 545 yards come after the catch. So about 48.3% of his yards are coming after the catch so far this year, and he's leading the team in receiving.
Yeah,
so
I had that number a couple weeks ago. Yeah,
pretty significant way he's getting open. And even comparing him to like Jeremiah Love, on his 21 catches he only has 5 force missed tackles on those catches. So getting the ball in different ways, of course, as you just mentioned, but it's still pretty significant. Jeremiah Love's is good at breaking tackles
he probably should come back for another year. I'm not sure that he's developed that.
And to be clear, that's on catches for Jeremiah Love.
Yes, just catches.
On running plays. Last year, Jordan Faison was good at it as well, though. He had 30 catches, 15 missed tackles forced. This year, 43 catches, 19 missed tackles forced. So he was well on his way, but he was injured a lot last year. He averages about a half a yard more this year. I think that's what the point was. They throw short. He's not going to break one and go 90, because he breaks him in traffic. Gets about 12 more. But I did a quick dig, guys. Faison was second on the team last year behind Jeremiah Love on missed tackles forced catching the ball. Obviously, Jeremiah Love was way above everybody else running, but catching the ball, Jeremiah Love was number one. Jordan Faison was number two. You guys want to know who was tied for third? And I'll give you one of them, Mitchell Evans. You want to know who was tied with Mitchell Evans last year after catching the ball, missed tackles? Aeneas Williams. Okay, we'll move on to question 8 there, guys, because he breaks tackles a lot, too. This is a double-parter from Kay Beasley and then Joe Hackett. Does staff, and he means coaching, I believe, have a feel for who's planning on entering the portal, or is it speculation at this point for them? Between Williams and Payne, if you felt that both would eventually leave, why not play Nolan James? But Joey Hackett asked the question, I would assume with the departure of Fields and Pauling, ND will take a nice big swing in the portal. CJ Carr is a heck of a selling point.
Boy, that he is. Well, they're going to need to. And as far as the question about entering the portal or speculation, I think in some instances they know. In other instances, a player or two or however many will say, hey, I'm thinking about leaving, and maybe didn't bring it up prior to making that statement to them. But, I think – you know, look, you're around these guys as coaches. You're around these guys every year. You know who's or every day. You know who's happy, who isn't, who's disgruntled, who's happy to be there and doesn't want to go anywhere. So I think you always have a little bit of a gut feeling about most of these guys, and some of them they've had conversations about this, and some will spring it on them.
Yeah, and I think that's been a point under Marcus Freeman, maybe even more so in the past, that you need to be having those relationships and conversations and having the open door for it, so we're not surprised. And I know they'll have maybe more serious conversations and really meet with everybody after the Stanford game, but I think they're going to have a decent idea. And just on the wide receiver thing, I also wonder with CJ Carr also noting we're maybe not going to have Jeremiah Love for sure, probably not Jadarian Price, so we're going to throw the ball even more often next year might be a big selling point for wide receivers.
Quickly on Nolan James, he's played 2 games, and they obviously want to play him 4 games. That would be why you don't play Nolan James against Navy. Number two for not playing him was Aeneas Williams ahead of him on the depth chart, and you would like to keep Aeneas Williams somewhat engaged before these portal talks resume, after the first portal talks made him feel like he'd be more engaged. I'd like to point out, after 2022, I think Freeman knows almost everyone who's going in the portal, because he sure did not know who was going in the portal when the 2022 season ended, and that was a lot of surprise going on, led by Rico Flores and people like that. I think Freeman has a really good idea.
Times have changed with that, yeah.
And if they don't know, it's because they're not good enough for them to care that they're going in the portal. That could be part of it as well. There's plenty of that, right? Like, how many conversations do you have with guys be like, really? You're going to the portal? All right, see you later. I mean, that happens too. You want to bring people in, you have to turn your roster over, but they got to know the top tier guys, because you have to have an ear to the ground and know. Mike Martin has to know. He has to at least be given a hint, because he has to plan all of December and January for this. Final question. Low man wins. That's true. Low man does win. Pittsburgh has 3 wide receivers and a hot quarterback. Miami and A&M had 3 wide receivers and a hot quarterback, though thankfully one of those is no longer any good. Can you assuage my angst-ridden fan concerns for this man-to-man perimeter matchup issue rearing its ugly head again? You left out USC, by the way, had 3 receivers and a hot quarterback.
No, I can't. especially if you don't have Christian Gray in the lineup. It's concerning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's concerning. You mentioned their number 3 receivers averaging almost 19 yards per catch. He's got an 84 yarder. Those top 3 guys have combined for 14 touchdowns. So that's noteworthy. It's a challenge. Pittsburgh generally has some wide receivers or a wide receiver that's pretty good. And Heinzel's good. So it's going to be a good matchup. Need to get pressure up front. I think that you can do that. I think you can do that against Pitt's offensive line. The problem is that Eli Holstein's not back there anymore, and Mason Heinzel is, and Heinzel has great vision. He really knows how to extricate himself from jams back there with a pass rush. Does an excellent job of keeping his eyes up, because he's looking for Kenny Johnson, Raphael Williams, and Katarris Hicks. So no, I can't assuage your concerns. It's a tough matchup for Notre Dame, and it's going to have to start with a pass rush on Heinzel and get his eyes off of downfield.
Yeah, if I'm trying to provide reassurance, I think the pass rush is, yeah, to your point, it's been much better since those first 2 games. And they're also doing a much better job of staying in the rush lanes like we saw against USC. And the other thing is that Heinzel is a little turnover prone. I think he has 5 picks in the last 4 games, and that was a key against USC, was getting Jaden Maiava, did he have 1 or no interceptions coming into that game? But they forced 3 turnovers there. So getting pressure and getting the ball kind of put in some tricky positions for a quarterback will, I think, be pretty big this weekend. And even if he gets the yardage, like we've seen quarterbacks get the yardage, but that doesn't always equate to points if Notre Dame's defense is able to get some of those big plays.
It's a 4-quarter game, and somewhere in the second quarter, first quarter, those guys are going to look like they're running wild and free. Because that's what Boston College, Lewis Bond did to Notre Dame, playing man-to-man. That's what happens when you play a lot of man-to-man defense. And then Notre Dame should settle in and be able to handle it. But my number one matchup to watch is Pitt's 3 receivers going against Notre Dame in a heavy dose of man-to-man coverage. Because if you're running enough crossing routes and enough deep digs, those 20-yard gains are going to happen. There's a reason Notre Dame gives up a lot of 20-yard gains. And it's the coverage they play. And it's the challenge they have for themselves and the challenge they put on everybody else. It's also why they lead the nation in interceptions.
Yeah. Bond is more of an underneath receiver. These guys.
He was catching 20 yarders, though, and that's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but we'll be back on Thursday to talk all about Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh is a fun one to preview, actually. We're going to have Pat Narduzzi as a special guest. He's going to call in, I think, in segment two, possibly. I've not confirmed that yet. We'll find out if it actually happens or not. Until then, for Tim Priester and Drew Bentock of Irish Illustrated, I am Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening. Irish Illustrated Insider.